It's 2:07 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live from the Coachella Valley. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, there is a giant apartment building in San Francisco that foundation is sinking to the point where the sewer pipes are about to start running the other direction.
Clean up on aisle 7.
And 8, 9, and 10.
Now, Randy, one of the things that you do, you wear many hats on this program. You are the technical director, you run the board. You are the co-host of the show. You do the sports casts. You pick the music, and especially on a day like Throwback Thursday, it changes week to week, so there's a lot that's involved with that. But you also monitor the news. You have a television that's on there in the studio just in case there's anything that the world needs to know about that happens while we're on the air. What's going on right now in the world?
So I've got two TVs. One's usually on CNN, so we see if there's any local national breaking news. Then we have the local news and Channel 5. They do newscasts all day long, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock. And then at 2 o'clock, it's the Maury Povich Show. And I have some breaking news for you. Danielle needs another DNA test. This time she has the right guy. She knows who the father of Tater Tot is.
And is this one going to pay child support?
Probably not. Marquise denies that he is the father of Tater Tot, so that's why they're taking a test.
Is this a rerun, or have they filmed it since the EDD check started going out?
No, this is brand new, and you can tell because now Maury is doing the DNA tests on Zoom.
Well, wait a minute. How do they enforce social distancing when they're fighting on stage?
That's the thing. He's sitting on a couch talking to two different screens. So I don't know what happens when you're not the father and the mother runs backstage. Does she just run to the back of her room?
No, that show doesn't work unless you can pull each other's hair and then do the icky shuffle if the DNA test turns out in your favor.
Well, that's why they had to up the stakes by naming the kid Tater Tot.
You know, if you name your kid Tater Tot, you're making certain decisions for that child that are going to impact that child for the rest of their life.
Well, you're assuming up to this point, these people have made good decisions.
If your name is Tater Tot, I'll tell you one question that will never be asked of you.
What's that?
So how's the Senate treating you? Just one man's opinion. All right. It's a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a former congressman from the great state of Florida, Congressman Mark Foley. Welcome.
Thanks. I was listening there about Tater Tot, and I actually thought I had switched to a Ryan Murphy edition of impeachment, and maybe that was Paula Jones' love child. Good God. And actually, Randy Wang was bringing something up I followed for years, and that's that collapsing condo in San Francisco. I'm stunned. You know, I think they spent $100 million on trying to stabilize it, and based on his report, it's still sinking. So I don't know, bad investment for those that chose to buy in San Francisco in that huge, glassy, shiny new tower some 10 years ago.
And they tell us you can never go wrong with California real estate.
Well, that one's a sinkhole waiting to happen.
Now, you mentioned the FX series, American True Crime Story. This time it's about the Clinton impeachment. You were in Washington, D.C., and observing all of that as that was taking place. How surreal is it to watch the FX series?
Well, you know, despite some of the commentary about the poor quality of Ryan's latest effort, I will say it's eerily similar to what we were living through. Day after day, reading new headline, new excerpts from all the major media about new information coming forward. Linda Tripp, you know, was really sullied during that period of time, mostly based on her looks. And the person they chose to characterize her in the series is spot on. But we were living in surreal times when you're thinking about we're going to a Saturday session. we're going to have an impeachment vote of the president. Bob Livingston, who is slated to be speaker, was announcing he was resigning because there's inference that he was having an affair with a lobbyist. We then hustled to get Denny Hastert to be the speaker in kind of a coup d'etat just to save the House from collapsing. So while we were in the middle of this maelstrom of all kinds of antagonism towards Clinton, and, you know, they say it was right-wing journalists. Listen, it was all Clinton's behavior. It had nothing to do with whether it's right or left. He stuck it in. He put himself in the position that he was in. And, you know, he was being heavily investigated. I really have to watch what I say. I started to slip into FX mode.
You think he's watching it?
I don't think he's let that thing near his TV set. But I will say this about Bill Clinton. His ego probably has him running to some travel aid motel to watch it on video because he wants to see if the guy nailed his accent, if he got his you know, nuance right. I got to believe the guy, because of the way he acted in office and after office, He's not forcing the show off the air. He's not, and he's probably looking with a little curiosity. I wonder if they got me right. You know, that Monica, she made up a lot of stuff, and I got to say, it wasn't all her. You know, if I had to come home to Hillary every night, you be the judge.
Now, in the show, they portray him as being unbelievably personable and charming. Was he like that whenever you had to deal with him one-on-one?
Without question. Listen, the guy has more charisma than anyone I've met in official Washington, past or present. No one was able to command a room like he did. Nobody was able to make you feel more important. I mean, I've heard that a lot from people. I was magnetized by his, you know, one day I remember we were in a White House and we're sitting in a line, and I merely mentioned to him as we're coming through the receiving line, shaking hands. He was in a casual golf outfit, short sleeve shirt. He had lost weight, and I had just seen him in Florida some weeks before. And I said, Mr. President, you look great. You've lost weight. And he goes, hey, Mark, thanks a lot. Come over here. And he put his hand on my shoulder and continued to receive people coming through the line. 5 minutes go on, and I'm trying to pull away. And he goes, hey, no, Mark, sit right here. I want to talk to you. Just let me say hello to people. It was like, oh, my God, this is bizarre. I'm sitting here with the president. He's holding my shoulder. And if it would be a woman, there'd be a lot of speculation what was going on. But at the moment, he captivates you like that. He looks at you sincerely. You know, I was with a lot of people in those situations, you know, senators, and, you know, they're looking at you, but you can see they're looking past you because then they see Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor or somebody on the background. Oh, my God, I got to get over there to talk to the justice before she makes her way out. So it's transactional. People are just looking past you, but they're seeing you, so they have to say hi. Clinton made it his business because he saw every person as a vote, particularly elected officials. And he worked it adroitly. He worked it in a compelling way. And I can tell your listeners that back then, with Newt Gingrich's intellect and leverage, we were able to end welfare as we knew it. We were able to set a balanced budget. We were able to accomplish things because Clinton wanted more than anything else success as a president during his term of office. And we worked together with him. So I will say to anyone who will listen, he was one of the best partners in government. He was one of the most engaged in intellectual debate about a subject matter. Compared to what we're living through today, I think the country would be well served to have Bill Clinton back in office this very day.
You know, that's interesting that you say that. I was talking to Roger Stone one time about Bill Clinton. And he said, and this was not publicized, but when Bill Clinton was president, one of the things that he used to do is he used to bring Dick Nixon into the White House as a sounding board, run ideas by him. He wouldn't bring him through the front door. He snuck him in, brought him in the back door. And those two used to sit around and talk politics, talk strategy, what would be good, what would work, what wouldn't work. And Dick Nixon had a very high opinion of Bill Clinton, thought he was a real smart cookie. And the line that he gave about Hillary, he only encountered Hillary a couple of times, but apparently Nixon's reaction to Hillary was cold as ice.
And he was absolutely spot on. Listen, I'm sitting in my home in Asheville, and I've got a note that he sent me, and it is among the framed possessions that I have, including one of Trump and many other presidents. But in personal hand, he writes on 2/18/95, "Dear Mark, thanks for your note. It was good to see you at the White House. Sorry, we got pulled away and weren't able to spend enough time together." I mean, it's a hand-signed note. You can see, because he's a lefty, that the ink is a little blurred as he, you know, moved his hand across the thing. But it's a signed note to me, because he got pulled away to something and had to leave the gathering we were at. You know, you get an auto pen signature from a president. I've kept this because it showed that he took the time to recognize we were partners in an effort. Different parties, different places and times, different ages to some degree, but he knew that he needed every willing person to pull the ship of state together to move forward. So I'm proud of it. I'm a Republican and proud of that. But I will say Bill Clinton's knack of getting to know people and making them feel welcome. I mean, I can see him doing that with Nixon. Never have I heard that story before. But if you're thinking of China, you're thinking of the things that we now have evolved to understand about the Chinese government and what he had done to create a detente, if you will, during an age of nuclear annihilation. It's just phenomenal. And that's what I want of our government, to work, to sit and work. You know, and I'm looking at the polling data that came up from Quinnipiac today. And if I were anybody working in the White House, he said, what have we done completely wrong? And it's not just one thing. It's virtually every metric and polling data suggests Joe Biden's out of his league, out of his depth, and doesn't have true partners working with him or for him. So, and more of the turmoil, as you know, John, is in their camp. It's not Republicans stymieing his legislative history or agenda. It's his own party mucking up the gears. You know, I'm not leaving, but I'll mention this one thing, because I haven't stopped laughing since this morning. Fox News was on, and they were talking about Terry McAuliffe's run for governor in Virginia. And the one guy, I don't even know who it was, says, well, listen, if Bill and Hillary Clinton had a son, it would be him. And it's true. And then Joe Biden would be his uncle. It's unbelievable, because here's Terry McAuliffe, who spent his life getting the Clintons elected, a poobah of the Democratic Party, who actually had the temerity to say today things in Washington aren't going well, because he knows his election's on the line. It's a veto of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and he should be reliably good shape. He's a well-known guy. He ran and served as governor. He's a wealthy guy. He's charismatic. He seems like a good mechanic of legislative issues. But he's even with the Republican in what has become a bluer state than we ever would have imagined. What is that as a result of? Well, you know, your governor barely survived, but this guy may not make it because of his toxicity with the president of the United States, Joe Biden.
Explain to me what Biden is doing, because when Biden ran in the Democratic primary, he ran as a moderate Democrat, comparatively speaking, to Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and the rest of them. Yet the minute he got into office, he sided with the squad over the Blue Dogs and threw the Blue Dogs under the bus with this vote on reconciliation and infrastructure and everything else. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about the border, if you're talking about Afghanistan, if you're talking about COVID, he's siding with the hard left of his own party at the expense of the moderate and conservative Democrats, and he's getting killed in the polling because of it.
Without question. And the moderates do not want to go home and explain their moderates. They play one on TV. Josh, what is this, Gottheimer from New Jersey, goes on CNBC all the time talking about being on the Problem Solvers Caucus. But they won't take the tough votes. They're not problem solvers. They are in the middle of a firestorm in their own party. And they're afraid to go home and explain, I'm really a moderate, because they know the appeal of the far left in the Democratic primaries in the party. So they're all calculating, what can I do to avoid a far left primary? And how do I avoid a Republican actually winning in my district? It's not unusual to have Republicans in New Jersey, New York, and other states. But the calculation has gone so far wrong because they're afraid of their own shadow. They won't step up to Joe Biden and say, Joe, you're really with the wrong people. This group will not get this legislative agenda passed. It can't get through the Senate. Why are we placating them? Why are you mouthing all of their agenda? Why don't you tell them to sit back and shut up? You're the leader of the party. And he said that emphatically. It's my party now. But your instincts aren't to corral these loose few, what I call far-left activists. He should be embracing Manchin. Joe Manchin has a solution. Kristen Sinema has a solution. They're working towards a solution. Instead, he lets them, well, you know, people do follow people into the bathroom. They videotape her in the bathroom. You know, last I understood, photographing or videotaping in people in a restroom is a felony. It's invasion of privacy. But no, he says, well, you know, unless you have Secret Service, people do that. They'll follow you about. So he can't even stand up for two of his own members in the middle of this kind of firefight, which shows members like Josh from New Jersey, why am I taking this vote? Why am I taking this pain? And I think ultimately it will be the undoing of their majority, not just because we have better candidates and better agenda items, but they've proven and he always says, I'm a railroad man. I travel the tracks. I go from Amtrak from Delaware to Washington. I've been on that train so many times I can't count. Well, he's proving today that he not only should never be in the conductor's car, but he sure probably wouldn't even show up for the right time for the platform to leave the station, because he's becoming, and we talked about this going into this election, they hid him in a basement to protect them and him from making mistakes that would come back to bite him. They're doing the same thing, manhandling him off stage. Don't let him take a question from anyone. Even friendlies don't get questions now, because this is a house of cards collapsing. And the American public are tired. You know, we've always embraced the notion, and Democrats used to, that parents rule the roost, that parents are the most important people in the family, that parents have the right to guide their children's future. But now flip the switch, and Merrick Garland, the attorney general, is sending out FBI memos suggesting that somehow we've got to stop these crazy people from appearing before their school boards and interrupting critical race theory because they're domestic terrorists. John, what in the hell has happened? You know, why are we separating parents from their own children? And Terry McAuliffe will probably lose for that one statement alone. Check mark it here, put quotes around my statement right now. He will probably lose the election, not because he's not a good guy or not because there's a lot of Democrats in Virginia. But when you step up and say parents have no right to know what their schools are teaching their children, Katie, bar the door. You've got some angry parents, whether they're far left or far right. I wouldn't step in front of a parent's right to do anything to their own offspring. And I think this kind of notion that you're going to micromanage every aspect of life, including purchases over $600, the average voter, the moderate, average Democrat, Republican, independent, will not tolerate this much longer. And we'll see the effects of that as we move forward into the 2022 elections.
Let's go back to Kyrsten Sinema for a second, because you served with members in the Congress who switched parties, went from Democrat to Republican, Republican to Democrat. Some of them became independents, whatever the case may be. So much of what happens in politics is personal. If you feel alienated by your own caucus, if you feel alienated by your own leadership, that plays just as much of a role in your decision making, I would assume, as the political. They're being really unbelievably nasty to her in ways that have historically been deemed to be unacceptable. Chasing her into the bathroom, harassing her on airplanes, harassing her in airports, with the powers that be essentially giving a wink and a nod saying, go ahead and do that. Could you see a scenario where a Kyrsten Sinema says, you know what, I've had it with you people, and she switches parties?
Well, listen, it's not far-fetched. It has happened before. I serve with many members in the South, Alabama, Mississippi, that were Democrats, became Republicans. It's all about survival. If you love the job and love serving, you can only take so much abuse. And in Kyrsten's situation, I got to believe with what has been happening, that is not a way to get a vote. And I don't know why people can't see through that, that you are alienating somebody who is on the razor's edge of deciding to either embrace part of the agenda. I mean, they're going all or nothing. And when you go for all or nothing in politics, you lose, because there's nothing all or nothing in our business. It's all series of negotiations. It's all a series of bifurcated issues that become part of a package that actually passed with great appeal to liberals, to conservatives, to Democrats, to Republicans, to independents. Bernie Sanders today, harping at pension. I mean, shut him up. If this is the way you think you're going to get flies with honey, well, you have just loaded up the wagon with nothing related to honey.
Well, you know, and what, so, their philosophy is? You get more flies with manure than you do with honey.
Well, and he's passing it on bucket loads. If I were president.
Congressman Mark Foley, we got to run. But okay. Thank you so much for coming on, and I love the clip.
I'll be in L.A. tomorrow. I'll be in L.A. listening to you live and watching the traffic reports, so let me know.
All right. Sounds good. Congressman Mark Foley, Thanks. Everyone. Well, this Throwback Thursday has certainly taken a turn.
Polka music, which actually gives me a window into what my life could have been like if I stuck with the clarinet.
You know, at first, I thought that people would pick their favorite band, they would pick their favorite genre, maybe they'd find a theme associated with the subject that we've been talking about on the show, and it pretty much was that for a couple of weeks. And then after that, it devolved into how can they torture us on a weekly basis.
You give the people charge, sometimes they use it in the most devolved way possible.
That's where we are. It's like the comment section on a TMZ article. They start out talking about the subject, and then it gets real nasty real fast.
We're just giving the people what they want.
That's what we do here.
Every Thursday.
Got to keep the customers happy.
Hey, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I can pick whatever I want. Friday, it's Jimmy Buffett, parrot head, Hawaiian shirt, cocktail drinking happy day. Thursday's for the people.
I wonder if the people of Huntington Beach are going to be celebrating Jimmy Buffett Friday tomorrow.
I don't think they'll be looking out at the ocean. It's a little shiny.
You know, it's funny. Earlier today, we were talking about how the air quality in Southern California stinks because of all the fires in Northern California started by PG&E. But now that I heard that this oil spill could be caused by a boat from Northern California, I'm thinking to myself, I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Well, the boat's docked in Northern California right now. I think the boat is originally from Germany. So those damn Germans did it again.
But even in Germany, they get the papers. They know if you want to get away with whatever it is that you want to do, just go to Oakland.
That's true.
They don't care. We have more on this. Here's KPIX.
Well, we have more breaking news tonight as we look live at the Port of Oakland. We learned a little while ago a massive cargo ship that is docked there right now made some unusual movements a few days ago near that oil pipeline that ruptured. KPIX5's Andrea Nakano has been digging into it.
The ship came here to the Port of Oakland after leaving Orange County. It was spotted this morning, and now there's an investigation underway to see if the ship's anchor played a role in rupturing the pipeline. Chopper 5 captured the Rotterdam Express docked at the Port of Oakland Wednesday. Tonight, we are getting a look at the ruptured pipeline in this video posted by the Coast Guard. According to the Associated Press, it tracked data that looks at marine traffic and found that the Rotterdam Express, a German flagged ship, made three unusual movements over 2 days that appear to put it over the pipeline. Captain John Conrad, who publishes an offshore blog, says there are many unanswered questions.
Who's reading an offshore oil drilling blog?
I'll tell you. Just as the internet taught us that there is a different fetish and slice of pornography for everyone, it's also taught us that there are blogs and podcasts for every subject and every fetish under the sun.
I wonder if he has an offshore podcast.
I'm sure he does.
Maybe you do a crossover episode with your cruise ship podcast.
Well, there is a member of the Coast Guard who's part of my cruise ship group who actually did work on the Exxon Valdez.
Captain John Conrad, who publishes an offshore blog, says there are many unanswered questions as they look into whether or not the Rotterdam Express had anything to do with the oil spill.
Did he have the right charts? Did this vessel traffic service advise him? Was this an old pipeline that maybe wasn't properly charted? These are the questions we have to ask.
The Coast Guard says the ruptured pipeline may have spilled nearly 150,000 gallons of crude oil into the ocean. Sky Truth, a nonprofit organization that uses satellite technology to track ships, says it never came closer than 1,500 feet from the line, and it's unlikely the ship's anchor is to blame. Southern California, though, just like Oakland, is experiencing heavy container ship traffic during the pandemic.
Wait, this doesn't have anything to do with the traffic jam at the ports, does it?
Oh boy, I forgot about that.
Southern California, though, just like Oakland, is experiencing heavy container ship traffic during the pandemic.
There's no space to put the containers. There's lack of equipment. Not enough chassis.
A spokesperson with Hapag-Lloyd tells the AP that the company is fully cooperating with the investigation. The company also says that the ship was pretty far away from the pipeline. In Oakland, Andrea Nakano, KPIX 5.
So the anchor must have been way, way, way loose if that was really what was to blame. But they're still investigating, but the gash in the pipeline sure looks like an anchor could have cut it.
Okay, so what does your gut tell you? Because it could very easily be one of two things. It could be the anchor. We could have a moron as captain on that ship. Gilligan doesn't know what he's doing. He drops the anchor right on the pipeline, and suddenly everything turns to sludge. But it also could be something else. It could be something the government did or the regulators overlooked. And they could be the ones responsible for it, and they're just looking for someone else to blame. They do that. That's exactly what they did in Benghazi when they blamed that video on the embassy falling.
We know that this company that's been operating the oil rig has been fined in California at least 70 times in the last couple of years for safety violations. So maybe they weren't maintaining the infrastructure. Maybe it was the ship. It could be a whole bunch of things. John, we have breaking news.
Okay.
Now, breaking on AM 790 KABC.
The results are in. Darnell is Tater Tot's father.
There you go. He's going back to Boise, and he's having his wages garnished as soon as that show is over.
And because it's all done on Zoom, there's no reconciliation. There's no, oh, bring the kid out and hug him. He just logged off his Zoom and probably is fleeing the country right now.
Yeah, we'll wait until they do a follow-up and he finds out he's also the father of loaded baked potato.
Maybe it's a family name. He named it after his grandpa, Hash Brown.